at RTURO on Twitter.
And I'm Danny at 89 on Twitter.
And this is another wonderful episode of Earning Season. This week, we're coming right out the gates. We have a wonderful, wonderful guest. Some of you would have heard us talk about her for many, many, many episodes. Yeah.
We're in the big leagues now, guys.
Well, or at least we're definitely getting somebody from the big leagues with us here. We have the one and only Mrs. Sandra Glasgow with us. Hello, Sandra.
Hi,
hello, Sandra.
Hi, Dana. It's really, really great to have you guys here at my house.
At your house, yes.
It's great to have you.
It's great to have you
on our podcast.
Yeah. There's so much of a huge story I don't even know where to begin. I had always wanted to get Sandra from, anybody listening would know that she has had quite the effect on the small business space in Jamaica over the years. I myself have known of her from TIC. There's somebody who don't know that was the technology or is the Technology Innovation Center
at
UTech. So when I was actually going to UTech, actually, was there. Bridget of mine, Garden Swaby, who's also been on this podcast. I know Garden has had a lot of good things to say about TIC. I remember being at Garden's office, actually, over TIC. Mm-hmm. I see him there. After that, I know you've done work with NCB in some of their early small business programs. You did the very first small business conference. Mm-hmm. And then no, the thing I hear about you the most is angels.
Yes.
The first angels.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, it's been my dream to have an angel investor network.
In Jamaica, so, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where are we coming from? So before we even jump to that, let me start off with thank you for
who
being
am I?
Yeah, who are you?
Who are you?
Who is Sandra Glasgow for the people who don't know?
Yeah, well, I am the firstborn for my parents.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, in Jamaica, you'd say, I'm the first of four for my mother and the first of 11 for my father.
Mm.
My parents were married very early. Mommy was 18 and daddy was 19.
Wow.
They were childhood sweethearts and they got married and they had four children in quick succession.
Mm.
We're all a year apart. Yeah. So, you know, when I say quick succession.
We wasted no time.
Daddy didn't waste any time.
And unfortunately, the marriage ended early because I suppose daddy got married too early. Eh? He hadn't really played the field enough. So, and playing the field while you're married doesn't work. So
that again for a lot of our
it
listeners.
It doesn't work. It didn't work for my mother. So she hightailed it out of there, you know, after my youngest sister was born. And I think she was like 27 when she was divorced.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
With four young children.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
You know?
Wow. What time period is this in Jamaica?
So this was... I was born in 1956. Mm-hmm. She got married in 1955. Oh. My brother Peter was born in 1957. We are both January, so I was on the 4th of January. He's the 11th. Yeah. Then my sister Denise was the 17th of September, 1958. And my sister Claudia, the 16th of October, 1959.
Wow.
And by 1963, my mother was divorced. Mm-hmm. With these children, 6, 5, 4, and 3. So I actually had to grow up very fast. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I was 9 years old, I was cooking meals for the family, you know? But my mother, and everybody says I'm just like my mother, and I guess I am. I have a lot of her qualities. She was determined to succeed, you know? So I remember her at one stage having like 3 jobs and, you know, she did her, I think she was among the first batch of part-time students doing their bachelor's degrees at UWI.
Okay. Wow.
She actually worked at UWI. She started in the filing section and then she ascended pretty quickly. She was the assistant registrar for student affairs. And then in 1974, she became the first pro registrar for CXE in the Western Zone. So she actually was one of the people who started the Caribbean Examinations mm-hmm. Council.
Wow.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's major.
Yeah.
That's major. So, you know, she's an educator.
Mm-hmm.
And my father was a businessman.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, my first job was working with my dad. And I was general manager for a company called MFV Limited, trading as Garden Foods, that made Solomon Gundy,
uh-huh.
hot and, you know, hot sauce, brown sauce, and pickles. We started off in Kingston, and then we went to St. Mary.
And you started off as GM?
At
the top.
I mean, and funny, I had graduated with a bachelor's degree in marine biology and applied botany. Mm. So I knew nothing about business. Absolutely nothing. In those days, you did sciences and that was it. There was no mixture. In my last year at university, they introduced a program where you could get one credit from another faculty. So I actually did economics. Professor George Beckford was one of my lecturers. It was great. It was fun, that course. But that's as close as I was, as I became when I did my bachelor's degree, to learning anything about business. So when I started, well, my dad always said, I want you to take over the business. So that's why I got the job. And I had to go and teach myself about marketing, about accounting. I mean, I tell business owners today, you just have to go and learn what you need to learn. And that's what I did. I took a course actually at IMP. You know what IMP is?
Even I know IMP.
Institute of Management and Production. It was part of the ICD group at the time.
Yep.
I did a...
Which used to be a listed company, just for the listeners.
Right. So I did a course in marketing.
Mm-hmm.
But for accounting, I bought books and I taught myself accounting, you know.
I just want to be clear. I just want to pause, Sandra. And just make the listeners know that I did not tell her to say that.
Because
it's a big contention for us on this show. Because I'm not a trained accountant or anything in that field. Everything I've done the same way. Then I tease about doing numbers, but he knows it from
investing, from actually looking at and learning. Yeah.
So to hear you say that you have been doing that years ago, everything you have to teach yourself.
You have to teach yourself.
Yeah.
You know, idea that you can just fly by without it. And
it don't work.
So many people are afraid of accounting and finance. Yet they're running a business. How can that?
How can that make sense? Very, very true.
True. Yeah. So I want to tell you a little bit about my family, especially on my father's side, because my father came from a very big family. My grandfather was a German, American, Caribbean guy who came here, had a farm in St. Mary, and had, by my count, and I'm one of the family historians, 29 children with eight women.
Wow.
Right?
With eight?
So
with eight
hard.
Women. Yeah. So,
And
of different hues. So my grandfather was white. He had Indian and black. And he had, his first wife was white. Then he had Indian and black. So we are a beautiful family of all kinds of mixtures. And we are proud of it.
Yeah.
And in our family, we don't talk about half brother, half sister.
She's right.
So I have lots of uncles and aunts. And cousins, and you know, and we look very different, and we look the same, you know.
One of those
just,
families.
No, and so I'm a Walter. That's my maiden name.
Okay.
Not Walters.
Walter. No.
Walter.
Okay.
And then my mother, on my mother's side, she was Reed. Her maiden name was Reed. And her family came from Westmoreland. So, you know, Ricketts, Reed, those are her people. Now, we're very strong on family. So even for me, you know, I have two daughters. two grown daughters. My daughter just turned, well, I can't say it.
Say it, Sandra. Somebody might be listening. Somebody might be interested in listening.
I won't say which one. I have a daughter who's 40 and one who's 39.
Really?
So I got married very early. I was 20 when I got married. Uh-huh. So Neil and I have been married for 44 years. Can you believe that?
Wow. Oh, and I see
it. Just the other day, he was 18 and I was 14. So all of these things have shaped who I am, you know. As I said, I'm very much like my mother, very driven, perfectionistic, although I'm trying to, you know, moderate that. I'm trying to rein that in.
I don't know.
I understand that one.
Yeah, I understand that one. I hear
I'm
that noise.
I'm trying to rein that in, you know, but I am very passionate about whatever it is we do. And, you know, when I went to work with my dad, I found my passion. My passion was business. And although I hadn't done business, I really loved running that company. And then my other passion is corporate governance.
Which is still the running, but the proper running of a company.
The proper running. And the reason that's one of my passions is because my father... I only stayed with him for 4 years because we had many fights about governance issues, you know?
And he would have been the head of that company.
He was the head of the company. Yeah. He was a managing director. I was a general manager. I remember he used to, we had a factory in Crossroads. He used to walk at through the back door and he would tell the staff to do everything that was different from what I told them just because... you know, I'm the boss kind of thing. Yeah. So we had a lot of differences about governance. And in fact, that company folded. These were the days of high interest rates. He had loans that he couldn't continue to service.
It's up to the 80s, sadly, 80s, 90s.
80s, yes. Yeah, yeah, I started working with Daddy in 1979? Lie. When did I start working with Dad? Yeah, 1979. And I left in 1983.
Okay. Yeah, Jamaica started to get pretty rough in the 80s.
So that period was really rough for him. And he had a group of companies. He had another business making awnings. So, you know, those metal awnings you see in a lot of
communities.
Grew
up with his daughter,
I remember he used to sell swing sets, patio furniture, and then later he started a drapery company. So that was Caribbean Sales and Trans-Caribbean Sales. And then he had a farm in St. Mary at Ballards Valley Estates. So it was his group of companies.
Yeah. That's not a... It's so funny how time turns, because now that's like a goal for many people, myself included. Yeah. I wouldn't mind having a group of companies and a farm I can go to disappear to. And I don't know about the 18 kids, but
29 kids. My grandfather has, Daddy has 11.
Wow, and you only have two.
And I only have
two. You can see it's a treat.
Well, this generation, I think we learned from the older generation that it's not so smart to have so many kids. So if you look at my, you know, contemporaries and the younger ones, you know, two is good.
Two is more than good. It really was a different age.
It was.
So you came up with business the what I call the right way. So you love it. Yes. The actual doing of it.
You actually go into it and learn from it.
Exactly.
I find that a lot of business people, they go into it and they find that they don't know what they should be doing. And instead of looking for the right path, they I'm just sticking my ways and then things are so bad.
Yeah. So after I left Dad, I actually went to work with an international organization called ICA, the Inter-American Institute for Cooperation and Agriculture. There was a project that USAID was funding that was meant to work with micro entrepreneurs. And the idea was that we would train, well, we wrote some manuals. So I wrote a series of manuals, starting and financing a business in Jamaica, operating a small business, marketing small business products. And those manuals were really targeted at micro entrepreneurs, people who were clients of some of the agencies that we were working with, a lot of them government agencies, but the National Development Foundation, I don't know if you had ever heard National of NDF,
NDF
that used to be in the 80s and early 90s, one of the funding agencies for small businesses.
Okay, a bit like the DBJ now.
Yeah.
But it was actually started by the Pan American Development Foundation, so it was private.
Okay.
And we worked with ministries, so the Ministry of Agriculture, RADA, had some programs. We worked with Things Jamaican, who were working with craft vendors. We worked with the Women's, the Bureau of Women's Affairs. And I supervised 10 Peace Corps volunteers. And so what we did was we trained trainers to use the manuals, and we and those trainers, working with the Peace Corps volunteers, trained the people in the field. And so that was a really exciting program, because I got to break down business into just the very basics, so that, you know, the idea was that a craft vendor should be able to keep track of
sales
and profits. Expenses and profits, because they're really not doing it, you know, and they could write a receipt. And they could do a cash book, you know, so it was illustrated. It was, you know, very simple. And it was just a lot of fun writing those manuals. Then that was what, 84 to 87. Just as my contract was ending, I got a visit from a Canadian guy who had come to start a project at CAST. The College of Arts, Science and Technology, precursor to UTech. And that project was to set up an entrepreneurial extension center, they called it. And they were looking for a local manager to work with this Canadian guy, Claude Degagné. And so I started there in October 1980. And I remember when I was interviewed by Dr. Sangson, I hold Blossom Amelia Nelson.
I think she's a former minister of education.
No.
Why do I know that name, Blossom
Amelia
Nelson?
She used
to actually be executive director of the NDF. But she's done a lot. Now she works, I think she runs at the microfinance. There's a microfinance association.
Yeah, I think the association. Yeah, a coalition. But she done work with Mayberry.
I think I know her. No, I know her from being young and watching Stokes, on news.
Chris Stokes and is
his mom.
Yeah, that's his mom.
Oh, wow. I know her name from news. So in a way, maybe she was a permanent secretary or something like that.
She was never in government.
She's never in government at all?
No, she was actually pro-chancellor at UTech. Just pro-chancellor. But before that
might be. I went to UTech also, so that may have been it.
Yeah. So before that, she was actually on the advisory committee of the Entrepreneurial Center, and she was one of the ones that interviewed me for that job. Now, at ECA, I drove a car with diplomatic plates, and I was earning US dollars.
While living in Jamaica, the dream.
Doing my shopping in Miami. Those good old days when you couldn't get
Air Jamaica,
stuff.
Oh God.
Right. So I remember they offering me some ridiculous salary because I had been at the time the tax rate was like 56 cents in the dollar for whatever income bracket that was. It was very high.
Wow.
And I was earning tax-free money at ECA. And they're offering me some ridiculous thing, right? So I said to them, Well, we had to renegotiate it, and actually, it was the PSOJ in the end that agreed to top up my salary because CAS couldn't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
But what I said to them was, listen, I think what you have here is something that could go places.
Mm-hmm.
And I think instead of just working with students, mm-hmm. I think we can provide courses to small business people.
Mm-hmm.
So would you agree if I would run these courses?
Mm-hmm.
And if you agree, I'll take 10% of the gross revenue.
Mm-hmm. Revenue.
Smart move.
Smart move.
Well, of course, they agreed because they didn't know what was going to hit them. And so I started on the 5th of October. I think it was the 5th. And by the early November, I was running, advertised a course called How to Start a Small Business in Jamaica and Succeed.
Mm.
It was the same course that students were doing,
mm-hmm.
but we packaged it. We said, I went to the head of the tech ed department. I said, Jerry, I'd like to rent your conference room. She said, Sandra, rent? You mean you want to borrow it? I said, no, I want to rent it.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay, rent it. Our office attendant, I said, Miss Burton, would you stay on and make sandwiches and tea and coffee so we could have a tea and coffee break? She said, sure. I said, I'll pay you a little extra.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we charged $300 for the 6 week, 2 evenings a week for 6 weeks. 3 hours, 2 evenings, 6 weeks, $300. We had 20 desks and chairs.
Mm-hmm.
We had 23 people registered.
Wow. And so you know success right off. You know how you find the right thing.
So right off the bat, we had a winner in that course.
Mm-hmm.
So I would stay back those 2 evenings. We got guest presenters who came in. And we were running that course for years. And then that was, the Canadians had actually brought that course. I think it was... I can't remember what agency in Canada had done it. And they essentially white out Toronto and put in Kingston, and they white out Waterloo and put in Maypen, yeah. Right? But then I went on a study tour the next year, and I went to the Federal Business Development Bank, which had a whole set of these courses.
Mm-hmm.
And I use the "we are a poor third world nation, can't afford to buy these things."
Give it to us in a grant. Yeah.
Could you give us the material? And they said, "Oh, absolutely." And they gave us the material, the license to use it, mm-hmm. the trainers' manuals.
Wow!
And so I came back, and with some money we had in the project, we, you know, typeset the thing, put on a new cover,
mm-hmm.
branded it the Entrepreneurial Center.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we put in proper names and case studies. And there were a number of courses. There was a marketing course, an accounting course, a course for small retailers, a course if you wanted to be a consultant, all kinds of courses. And we'd run these courses in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were making money. There was one time, there was a time that came that I was earning more than Dr. Sangster, who was the president.
Oh, wow. Well, but yeah, you're getting 10% off the top.
Off the top, Randy. So
a sharp business.
but the thing is, Dr. Sangster didn't mind because he had a vision for that. Mm-hmm. Entrepreneurial Center. He was very proud of it.
Yeah, he's actually been very visionary over there.
A great man. He was a great president. I enjoyed working with him. So that's how I started at UTech. Cast, UTEC. And then actually when I went on that study tour, it was to look at business incubators. This was 1988. Mm-hmm. They were just starting. Mm-hmm. And when I came back, I said, you know, this is something we need in Jamaica. So again, with some money that we had in the project, I convinced the Canadians to allow us to build some some furniture. Mm-hmm. We had a room in the back and we built six of these cubicles, bought chairs, and we created what we called a professional office package where people could pay us every month mm-hmm. to come and use that space as their office. Mm-hmm. And they had me as their mentor. And we were the first unit on the campus to have a fax machine. So we had a fax service. In fact, for years, we offered a fax service to the university.
Oh, that's smart.
And charged them $5 a page to receive. And those days you had, remember the days when to make an overseas call?
ICAS.
It was a different rate. So we had to have a rate sheet. If you wanted to send a fax to Japan or if you wanted to send. So we had a roaring business.
Yeah. Technology business, but I was cutting edge at the time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that was cutting edge.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Then we set up a business services center
mm-hmm.
where we had high speed
copiers
and printers.
Yeah. A lot of the people who did UTEC would know that now. Because I know you go over there if you want to get a lot
go
printed.
Go to BSC
and
you would get things printed. You could send your faxes. Mm. If you wanted stuff typed up.
You could get it done.
Wow. We did binding.
Yes.
So if you had an assignment.
Thank you, by the way. There's many an assignment you guys helped me with. At the end, get it bind over TIC.
Yes. But that started from the Entrepreneurial Center days. So it was, part of it was like going to conferences of the National Business Incubation Association because I'd just been so fired up about this idea of business incubation. Mm-hmm. We joined the National Business Incubation Association and I went to those conferences. And we were doing a lot of work, consultancy work, especially with the EU, USAID. A lot of work on micro enterprises, a lot on micro credit. We were training loans officers to give micro credit and all kinds of things. And at one point I said to myself, but you know, I don't think focusing on micro enterprises is really going to move the needle in our economic development. We need to look at companies that are focused on technology.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so we want to be we want to distinguish ourselves mm-hmm. as the small business agency that is nurturing technology-based businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how the idea of TIC came about. I, with some help from some members of the NBIA, wrote a business plan for it and sort of pounded the pavement, went to everybody trying to find funds. Because mm-hmm. I was looking for money to build this building,
mm-hmm.
Which my vision was a state-of-the-art technology innovation center.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody was offering grants for building. So eventually we the CDB said we could provide a loan. It would have to be government guaranteed,
mm-hmm.
but we could provide a loan to build it. Convinced Omar Davis, who was the minister at the time
mm-hmm.
to provide us with a government guarantee. And then CEDA came in and said we will match the amount that you're borrowing with a grant to equip the building equipment, mm-hmm. furniture, training, and some operational costs. So that development, I wrote the concept paper for that TIC in 1995.
Mm.
1995. Lie. 1989.
Wow.
It took us until 1996 to actually secure the funding for it.
To start. The money to start.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. 7 years.
So, and then after that, it went like clockwork. We were the first, I think we were the first to use a Chinese firm to put up a building.
That's gotten very popular now. You really set trends. That's gotten very popular these days.
China Jiangsu, they were doing a lot of work in Trinidad because in Trinidad they were active, but there were no Chinese firms doing infrastructure work here.
Mm-hmm.
But when we did the tender, we had about, I think we had up 3 or 4 Jamaican construction firms, contractors bidding.
Mm-hmm.
Their rates were very high.
Mm-hmm.
The Chinese, like, you know, 116 million, 130 million. Chinese bid $75 million. Mm-hmm. No brainer.
Yeah.
Same concept being used nowadays. Yes. Right. As we hear from the construction industry, but this then is late 90s. So
this is 1999. We put out that tender. And I think 2001, they were supposed to start.
Mm-hmm.
They were supposed to start in January. The project was from January to December.
Mm-hmm.
They broke ground in April and they finished on the 24th of December.
Wow. Also unheard of back then, especially. No, it's unheard of. And back then it was.
They brought, though, 25 of Chinese workers.
Oh, to them. Well, they do the same thing now, I gather.
Yes. They lived on the site.
Okay. So it's constant.
Constant work. Yeah. And I always say, people, one of the things that impressed me with that construction was that the mason was also a steel man, could do the framing, was also a plumber.
Multi-talented.
The tiler was also a mason, was also something else, right? So, you know, in Jamaica, workmen, you're either an electrician or you're a tiler, or you're a mason.
Yeah. Me not do that, boss. Yeah, no,
me not do that, boss. Exactly. No. Like the driver doesn't do
anything.
Lift anything
at all.
Trust
me. I think the only workmen in Jamaica who double hat are the people who fix AC.
Hmm.
Me can fix fridge too. You know, they're the only people I know who the two things. Everybody else, one.
No,
thing.
But they're not. They're not. What would they do? They probably don't do the electrics. They probably
No, definitely not.
So, So that building was built in record time.
Mm-hmm.
And you've seen it. It's
a beautiful
quality
building.
Is tremendous.
It is. And it has a courtyard. It's one of the first buildings I've been in that has, you go inside and there's a, actually, it sounds simple, but to me, that's a big deal. You go in there and there's art.
And see a model of it? That's
yes,
that
painting
was done. Yeah, is
that the painting, the sculpture. Sorry, so for the people, nobody can see, so I'll have to tell you, anybody's been to TIC, you know, there is there a name for the sculpture?
Yeah, it's really embodying the 7 S's of business incubation. So you see those 7 rods
behind a woman with
outstretched
arms.
It's a woman. Looking up to, and we were very deliberate about it being a woman. And you notice that she's tiptoeing.
Yes.
Now that logo was developed by Tariq Kiddo. He did our graphics and he designed the TIC logo, which they're still using today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it was a wonderful time. I had an incubator manager called Joanne Fraser. Prince Philip came to open it. Michael Leachin did the official opening. It was a really wonderful time. And when I left TIC because I had been promoted to senior vice president, that was 2004. We were making profits. $12.7 million was the profit we made in 2004.
You guys were profitable then.
Did you hear what I said?
Wow. Because in 2004, I would have just started to go to UTEC, and it was thought of as almost a charity thing.
We were on our own.
Yes, it was separate. It was separate. Yeah.
No, subsequent to that, the university changed its policy and integrated TIC into the university's accounts.
They heard about the profit.
The worst thing they could have done.
They heard about the profit.
Because we had been operating as an autonomous unit for all of those years. And since they changed that policy,
Yes, there was a mark. Let me not step on anybody's toes. But there was a time you could tell TIC used to be very good for two things. It was you could get printing done there, you could get copies done, and I know a little bit of the age. Anything online. There was a time when you have to go there. You could use the computers there quicker than anywhere else.
Right, because we had internet.
Exactly. Early days of internet.
Lloyd Distant, who used to work at Cable and Wireless at the time. I mean, we had a very sophisticated telecommunications infrastructure. We had a server room. I mean, it was plug and play. If you were a tenant, you came in and you plugged in. Those days you used Ethernet or whatever
it is. 56K or whatever.
You plugged in to get your internet.
Mm-hmm.
It's not quite so.
Yeah, but it was
internet is not so available these days.
By the time I'd left UTEC, it was known for printing, still copying, and good lunches. You go over to TIC to get food. But I think that's just how the students refer to it.
Yeah, because we had our own little restaurant.
Yes.
We had
our own little which was also better than all the food on the campus.
Right. So the thing is that the students came to do their printing and copying and so on. But we were always, from Entrepreneurial Center days, focused on people outside.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, most of the tenants were people from outside, people who wanted to start businesses, not necessarily students. In fact, we had very few students. There were people who would come there, and it was not just for the space. There was a bundle of services. We had speakers. I actually tried to start something called TICAIN, the Technology Innovation Center Angel Investor Network.
Wow. In the mid
2004, I brought down a woman named Susan Preston. We had seminars with high net worth people, including your boss we were talking about earlier.
Thanks for giving me something to edit.
and we went to Mo Bay and had a seminar there, and there was a lot of interest. It just wasn't the time. In fact, Michael Leachin pledged $1 million to a fund we were starting. What happened, like, you know, I mean, 2004
things got rocky.
Started 2007, 2008. It didn't actually happen. But that stayed with me. The information that I had picked up on my Eisenhower Fellowship in 2000 and bringing Susan down in 2004 and connecting with people like, you know, we had a little group that was working on actually setting up this fund. Chris Berry, P.D. Chin.
That's not Tasties. Am I getting that right?
No. Peter Chin, Alliance.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. If you don't know what Alliance is, you will know in about 6 months.
Right. So, we had a group there working on this. We had a consultant who was doing a feasibility study, and you know, in fact, we flew up to Michael's office in
Canada, Toronto.
In Canada, to pitch this thing to him, and he said yes. So those were in train, but then I got promoted into a different area. I was in corporate services. Mm-hmm. And so I was no longer responsible for the TIC. And then I left UTEC in 2007. So, and then I went to the PSOJ mm-hmm. as CEO, spent 5.5 years then. And then in 2013, I decided I'm going to start my own company.
Mm-hmm.
And then Joe and I started First Angels.
Wow. And your own company, that's BizTactics. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Which is essentially, if I understand it right, mm-hmm. it's essentially teaching that, allowing people who are actually running businesses to learn some of the things that you don't even realize you need until you're
yep.
in the middle of it.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, what our tagline is supporting growth aspiring firms.
Mm-hmm.
I do a lot of work in corporate governance, board leadership, mentoring boards, mm-hmm. helping companies that don't have boards to mm-hmm. set up their boards,
mm-hmm.
and then mentoring the CEO to make sure that the board structure, the governance structure works.
Mm-hmm.
I do strategic planning. I help with policy formulation. I was actually the first accredited mentor on the Junior Stock Exchange.
Mm.
Wow.
Oh.
Wow. That yields a lot of firsts. Yeah. That's a lot of firsts.
First accredited mentor on the Junior Stock Exchange. Mm. So my first company that I mentored was CPG.
Mm-hmm.
I stayed with them for mm-hmm. five and a half years as well.
The early heavy growth years.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The heavy growth years. And then I'm mentoring now medical disposables mm-hmm. and supplies.
Also.
Yeah.
About to, well, they're not new, but they are,
2013.
I think, yeah, listed.
Yeah.
And they're about, no, I think personally, to jump to like the next phase of their growth. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, actually the booths, mm-hmm. I met them because I was doing a lot of work at PSOJ on family business governance.
Mm-hmm.
just looking at the particular issues that family businesses face.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's the intersection of the family yeah. and the business.
Yep.
And very often the family issues
spill over
into the business.
And the business eating really, the family.
Yeah, helping the families, especially those that want to grow and mm-hmm. want to list, navigate that journey
mm-hmm.
to not being so family or not having the family issues spill over,
mm-hmm.
you know, setting up family councils.
Mm-hmm.
And
how, just in general, how you manage it.
People notice
the difference between, and this is for the listeners really,
yeah.
we're just doing a tidbit, like the difference between JMB, which is a family company, started as a family right. company.
Mm-hmm.
And how that was set up in terms of the family ownership and running. And let's say like a Fontana,
mm-hmm.
which would have been a more recent also family listing, but how that is set up and run. And you can see the two different, the different approaches and two different times
mm-hmm.
still, but it is a great lesson. And then
But Randy, when you think about a lot of the companies in Jamaica, even mm-hmm. listed ones,
yep.
they started out as family businesses.
Yep. Yep.
Grace Kennedy, Mayberry is a family mm-hmm. business. Mm-hmm.
I want to say most.
Most, absolutely.
It's really the big ones that are pivoted away from the family structure.
Yeah. The thing is, when you go public, you are forced to
be public, actually.
And for the family issues not to take, you know, such a big thing. But for small businesses, it's a big transition. It's a big mm-hmm. challenge to manage those issues in a way that will allow the company to grow. There are all kinds of succession planning.
Yes.
I mean, so we had actually quite a successful project that I pitched to the IDB
mm-hmm.
and got funding for when I was at PSOJ. And we did a really fantastic project working with some specific family businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And I still am very, very interested. And, you know, it's coming from my own experience.
Yes. I like that build-up. I like that build-up. Mm-hmm. You're coming from the father's business.
That's
you get
where
to,
it all started.
Yep.
So I understand it very clearly.
Very, very clearly. And you touch board points. I mean, you brush it lightly, but in the streets, your name ring out in a Sandra. You are Miss Board, Mrs. Board, right?
Yes.
I mean, you touch, I would say, probably the most powerful board in Jamaica.
NCB Financial Group.
Yeah, NCB yes. Financial Group. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The company's so big that if they are better, we're all better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
I like that, Randy.
Yeah. I'm a happy shareholder.
I'm going to share that one with Mike.
Yeah, well, you, like tell him, you tell him that Randy said.
I will. I'll tell him that Randy said. You should talk to Mike one day.
I agree with you.
Yeah. I'm going to make it happen.
I agree with you 100%. But what is that like, though? Because, I mean, he's revered in Jamaica. I think it's almost at a point where the idea of Michael Leachin is bigger than, I'm sure, the reality of Michael Leachin. Yeah. But you know both. So what is that like?
Well, I tell you, I tell him all the time, I was really honored when he asked me to join when he just bought NCB. Uh-huh. And I actually, my formal training in corporate governance started when I became a board member at NCB.
Really?
Because I wanted to know more. I mean, I'm curious about these things. If I'm going to, as I said to you, if I'm going to do a job, if I'm going to run a company, I need to know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So I actually did, you can see there, the
company director course.
That was 2003?
Yes.
Right.
And that's, we're looking at
now. No, that company, that organization doesn't even exist anymore. It was the Commonwealth Association for Corporate Governance, CAGC, in the Commonwealth Secretariat. And they did. Was that a 5-day or a 7-day course? Does it say? But it was at, you know, what's that hotel? It was a residential course.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be owned by Carreras, Randy.
Sanssouci. Yeah.
So it was like there. Mm-hmm. And I learned a lot about being a director.
From that course. Yeah.
So when I went back to the board, I said, well, here are the things we need to be doing to improve our governance.
Mm-hmm.
And they took on board everything that I recommended. So for my, you know, I mean, for all of that, you know, when you start giving advice to people, they say, okay, run with it. I have been the chair of the corporate governance committee since then. And
that's not light. Sorry, that's not light. Because NCB is legendary on the market. Mm-hmm. And especially I tend to deliberately to give them praise because they are the standard.
Yeah, and the structure, their corporate governance structure is the best. Hands down.
They tell us.
You know when the dividends are coming. You know when the financials are coming. You can track and say.
At the start of the year.
Exactly.
You can say. Care about the investors.
And exactly. You know, not to mention the fact that we have won many, many, many awards at the stock exchange.
Yes. Especially for corporate governance.
That is true. So, I mean, we are very competitive when it comes to that. Mm-hmm. And as chair of the committee, I'm always pushing the boundaries of disclosure and transparency.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, we were the first to disclose directors' fees.
Yes.
We were the first to disclose attendance at meetings.
Yes. You're also, I think, I could be wrong, but you're either the first or one of the first to stream your AGM.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's popular now.
Yeah.
But back before it was popular,
and
you could watch it.
And your quarterlies.
And you do calls.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we are very, very big on corporate governance.
We need some more of you in Jamaica. We need some more of you in Jamaica.
Well, you know, with the companies that I mentor, I say to them, listen, I want you to win the world, you know, the Junior award. Stock Exchange. Not everybody is
as competitive as
I am and interested in vying for those.
I think Dana and I understand that sort of competitive drive. I'm like, come on, guys, we need to do it. Yeah, not everybody is like that.
But I think winning awards tells you something because they're very, and the stock exchange especially has very stringent requirements to win those awards.
Yeah.
And we get very disappointed when we have to share it. Or when we're on the one or two occasions that we have actually lost the Corporate Governance Award.
You did lose it to Carreras 1 year when I was there.
Did you?
Yeah, because I was at that dinner. I was very happy. Yeah. It's a good thing, but that is not a light point that you mentioned. You see how in the 80s and 90s, you're pushing entrepreneurship and understanding of entrepreneurship. And we've seen the effect of that two decades on now, right now, when it is relatively easy to start a company, mm-hmm. 25K company's office. And if you have an idea, you do it on your computer, boom, it's a business.
Yep.
And you can actually make some very good money very quickly. Mm-hmm. But then you get into another world now where you actually need the governance. Mm-hmm. You need, and the governance is hard. I can tell mm-hmm. you, somebody doing it myself now, I didn't know I'd spend most of my time handling customer care or the small things, or if I need somebody to do something, I have to do it myself. I have to learn it so that when I ask you to do it, if you do it wrong, I have to fix it. And in all that, you lose
not
sometimes.
Just that, it's having a board to mm-hmm. account
the
to.
The number one thing, which I tell everybody, and I'm not as good with my board as I should be, but I like that I know that. And I like that they know that. I know that also, that the board is necessary. So number one thing I tell anybody, if you're serious about an idea, form a board.
Mm-hmm. You have investors?
I know I've found everything out of pocket.
So when you have investors in your company, mm-hmm. like, you know, if you're a public company, you mm-hmm. have loads of investors.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah.
You have to account to them. Correct. You have to account to your shareholders.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's the same thing. So jumping now to First Angels.
Yes.
All our portfolio companies have to have a board.
A board. I want to back up a little bit because you give us such a good story. I want you to give the same First Angels start.
So
First Angels is current, right. And that's where you are.
So in 2014,
mm-hmm.
Actually, was it 2013, Julian Robinson was then Minister of M-STEM. It's funny, like I was going to leave PSOJ the next week, and he called me to say, the World Bank wants to send a delegation to Chile
mm-hmm.
to look at their Startup Chile program.
Mm-hmm.
Would I come? I said, absolutely, I will come. I am leaving PSOJ, so I'm on my own. I'm going to start my own company. So went to Chile, and there were 12 of us, Audrey Richards from DBJ, Ingrid Riley, myself, some World Bank people.
Mm-hmm.
Can't remember who else. But we went to look at the Startup Chile model.
Mm-hmm.
And Julian said to me, would you help us to do something like that in Jamaica?
Mm-hmm.
It had been built into a project that the World Bank was funding, but that project hadn't yet signed the agreement for it. Mm-hmm. And Julian really wanted to get it going. So we said, well, let's go to the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually went to FLO, as it was then, and Jamaica National. And the FLO agreed, JN agreed to put up space, about 3,500 square feet on their building at Duke's 32.5 mm-hmm. Duke Street.
Mm-hmm.
And FLO agreed to furnish and equip the space.
Mm-hmm.
So we had all the pictures from Startup Chile. I did a lot of research on what these accelerators looked like. And the FLO people brought in their designers. And I don't know if you have ever been there, Randy. Startup Jamaica on Duke Street.
I don't know if I went to the Duke Street one.
We started Startup Jamaica, although it was part of this World Bank project.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
JN and FLO were the private sector drivers of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the model was, we did a boot camp.
Mm-hmm.
And actually we had people from, one guy from Barbados and a couple guys from Trinidad, and they came with the Jamaicans. Then the World Bank people brought in a partner, Oasis 500 from Jordan.
Uh-huh.
And to my disappointment, some of the boot camp people were sent to Jordan. I don't think it worked out.
Probably not.
But the idea was that they would be incubated in this space.
Mm-hmm.
And we were then, World Bank was doing a lot of work with Digital Jam.
Mm-hmm.
Digital Jam. So there were a lot of young people pitching their ideas for
you mentioned
mobile innovations.
You went to Chile with her. I don't want to get her name wrong. You just you mentioned Ingrid. Ingrid, yes. Yeah. It was that's how I know of it, because I know Ingrid used to have events.
Well, Ingrid had her startup, what you call it, weekend or...
Eventually it was a weekend, but even before that, she was bringing a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's how I got exposed to a lot of what you were doing for the whole space.
Right, right, right. So anyway, after a year, DBJ actually had hired me to get it started. And I had a one-year contract and actually left a month before my contract was ended. It was... time.
Always set in space.
it was time. And the World Bank had, in that time, said to us, they'd invited some private sector people to a meeting, and they said, you know, we want to send you on a study tour to look at incubators and accelerators. And angel networks. Angel networks, sorry, not incubators and accelerators. Angel networks, because they were pushing angel networks. So I put up my hand and said, been there, done that. Tried to start one. Actually, I had a guidebook. The World Bank had used Susan Preston's guidebook that she had done when she was at the Kauffman Foundation. Mm-hmm. And they had updated it. I said, I have the original thing.
Yeah, the actual original guys, trust
me. So it was Joe Matalon, Joe M, and a guy named JJ G-Wax, an American, you know. And we said, you know what, we're not going on a study tour, let's just get it started. So Joe said, all right, do up a budget. So I did, looked at some costs, and I said, Joe, would you host a luncheon? We'll invite some of your business friends. We did. Did up a presentation for him. And I think there were like 14 people at the luncheon. And we said to them, who is with us? 10 of them said yes. I divided the budget by 10, and that became our
starting
subscription fee. To join the network.
Smart. So, that's the EPI model. This is what we paid, so this is the price.
Exactly. So, and those fees haven't changed in 6 years.
That is the EPI model.
So we just started running an investment readiness workshop. JJ built the website. And we started doing PR, and this just started coming.
Quietly spread throughout the list of people who care about business like that.
We actually started doing some of our early pitch events down at Startup Jamaica. So I was still there when we started, and we had our first pitch event in November 2014. Daniel Terrellong and twin girls from Montego Bay who had a lovely fruit, what did they call it? Anyway, it was like a popsicle, but it was local fruit. So they pitched, and Daniel did a really good pitch, and by May, we invested in her. That was our first investment.
That's no DRT communication.
DRT communication.
She's also strong.
In that space.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you know the advertising space, DRT holds their own there. And especially the data analytics side.
PR is their forte, and media monitoring.
Yes.
Which was she had been running this as a sole trader. DRT communications. But what she brought to us was this technology that could listen to the radio, could pick up mentions of brands from the internet, from TV, any electronic means, and could just translate them into a report. I don't know about you, but there was a time when everybody, even at PSOJ when I ran it, the front desk lady had, you know, we bought the gleaner and she would look
cut out
mentions of PSOJ, right? And I remember back, you know, as far back as 1988, going to Jamaica House one time to talk to Babsy Grange. And I saw this big room of people. And they were listening to Moti and they were listening to the radio talk and shows. The TV, and they would be writing down
what was said.
That was media. That's how they did media. Media
monitoring back then.
So when Daniel came to pitch her idea, we loved it. And we've invested. I sit on her board and she's a wonderful founder. She is, I say this all the time, Danielle is the poster child for angel investing because she had a great, she had a business that she recognized needed to step up to another level. She found technology, licensed it. She's been very responsive to her board. She, you know, she uses the support that her board gives her. You know, she will call me and bounce things. Her chairman is Stacy Hines. I mean, all of us, Kareem Tomlinson sits on the board as well. She soaks in advice. You know, she's not resistant to having a board.
Which is right.
She has her board meetings. We get good reports. She, frankly, she's the only one who has been consistent about doing her annual reports, getting her audited financials. I mean, we're really struggling with some of the others to get them.
Yeah, it's a real thing. Somewhere in that story, I know you had the small business conference, the very first one I think NCB sponsored. I know I went to that one. Myself and Gordon actually went to that one. And I remember they did a quick survey while they were there. And I think maybe only two people in the room said that they consistently did their financials for their company. And these are listed companies, obviously. This is people running
small business,
but no names out there, you know, and they're making good money, but the financials, they're not doing it. And it's the two things I know that I see hit business people all the time. Keeping up with the financials, one, and the second one is not thinking of your board as a threat. They're there. Everybody seems to think of the Steve Jobs story, them going to fire me. Guys, that's, go and understand that story.
That can happen, you know, but it's the last resort.
And it should.
It should. Yes. If you're not stewarding the company properly.
If Steve Jobs hadn't been fired, Apple wouldn't be what it is today.
He needed
to have been fired at the time.
You know, Randy, it is, I'm actually running our first online investment readiness program right now.
Really?
We started on July 21 and we have pitches on Tuesday and Wednesday and we end on the 16th. And I say this to the people who are aspiring to get investments from First Angels. I say this to them. I say, listen, when somebody parks their money in your company for 5 years, you have to be responsive to, you have to be accountable.
They're an owner of the company.
Exactly.
Just like you.
And they don't realize that.
Yeah.
We own the company too.
Exactly. Just like you. You know, so you can't, and I mean, even if it is that there are some people on the boards who are proxies for the shareholders, because some of the shareholders, you know what I mean? I couldn't be on all the boards.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So respect that and take from it. I tell you, a lot of this is a complaint I hear all the time from our founders. Oh, why can't we have some entrepreneurs like so-and-so and so-and-so instead of these corporates? I said, but listen, those corporate people know stuff. They are accountants, they are specialists, they are HR people, they are analysts, they are whatever. So they may not have started a business themselves, but they understand business.
And they bring something to the table.
And they bring something to the table. They bring in real value.
Exactly.
So embrace it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you cannot knock it. To add to your point, I know I spent 8 years at Carreras and I now look back at that time. There are things I learned that I didn't know I was learning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because it's a well-functioning machine and you get a job within the machine. So you work. But knowing I'm on my own, Then I talk all the time.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I did for a couple of years, I managed a receivables portfolio. I understand it so clearly now from the ground up because of the years I spent doing that. And also things like the need for these whole heap of meetings and blah, blah, blah. Corporate people. They have learned and have actually done day to day the things that you may not have even realized you needed.
And I think entrepreneurs, they often take for granted where they're going. So they see the big company and they say, oh, they find every niche in it to say, oh, that's a problem. So you're a cog in the machine and you don't bring value. But if you want to be anything, you want to be at some point that big the big company. So you're going to understand that you're going to need cogs in your machine to bring value.
It comes from somewhere. If you were at that conference, you would have said, behave today like you are 100 times bigger.
Yes. You actually said that at the small business conference.
I said that. I still say it.
Yeah.
Behave today as if you are 100 times bigger because that's the only way you're going to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And I really believe that if you have good governance, it's your path to success.
Yeah.
Because it injects discipline, accountability. Right? And so I tell you, it's a big challenge that we have working with businesses. That's why I say Danielle is, and there are a couple others like Ajani Harris Williams from Sci-Fi Studios, who is one of our investees.
Okay. What do they do there? You give them some free ads.
Okay. they have a company called It's called Sci-Fi Studios, but they have a platform, a real estate platform called Keys.
I do know about Keys. K-E-E-Z. Right. No, I know it. Yeah. I know it very well, where you can find places to rent, places to buy.
So one of the things we have had to, well, not had to do, we have done, is embedding our term sheets and our shareholders' agreements that you must have a corporate secretary. That we designate, that you must have an accountant that we designate.
You must
do your annual audits, although lots of them are trying to catch up now.
Yeah.
Right? And have your annual general meeting. Because you have to behave today like you were 100 times bigger.
Yep. Yeah, it is the biggest. It stuck with me. I'll never forget that you said it. It was after they'd given the results for how few people did it.
I'd included that in my presentation. Yes. This poll.
Yeah, it stuck with me. Yeah. You said,
I'm certain I've heard Randy Coty before.
Yeah. Run this big company like a small company, company like a big company. That's not me. That's Sandra Glasgow. Yeah. It was a nice weekend in Mobay. They rented the hotel and it was really cheap. If you said, I said, wow, I get a hotel and I get to the conference.
Right.
And that stuck with me there. Run this big company like it's a small company, only small company like it's a big company. Mm-hmm. And I've done that since that. I have said every single time I start an idea, form a board.
Yeah, absolutely.
Every single time.
Absolutely.
And I tell people, if you're not, you'll know if you're serious or not. Because if you hesitate on that, then you're not really serious.
When I say to people, you know, look at somebody like Patrick Hilton, who is just a genius, really.
Underappreciated, I think.
Yeah.
I think he's too close to Michael, so people don't appreciate that. Michael is not handling NCB every day or that group.
And that's not Michael's style.
Exactly.
And you think that he's the 60% shareholder that he would have his fingers in.
Every day, no?
Right?
He steps back.
Nose in, fingers out. That's a saying in good governance, right? Nose in, fingers out.
Yeah. You pass a smell test, but not.
But when you see Patrick interacting with his board, you know, we don't have just quarterly meetings. We have 10, 11 meetings a year.
Really?
Absolutely. Plus committee meetings. So the notion that, you know, you get big and you don't need the board's support and intervention. That's nonsense, right?
Yeah. And that's at the NCB level where they can step back.
Of course, they could.
Yeah.
They could.
Yeah, but it's because they haven't stepped back where we see the effect of them not stepping back. That board is so interesting to me. I'm sorry, I don't want to concentrate too much on it, but I think the four, so I've always said that obviously Lee Chin again gets a lot of the praise because of his story. And the second most impressive person I want to meet from there is you.
Really? No.
Yeah. And then there is, I'm not just saying that because you're here. I mean it. And of course there's Patrick and Sanya, literally Sanya. The four people. I didn't know there's
everybody. Rob Almeida is great. No, he's brilliant. He's brilliant. Rob Almeida. What about Professor Alvin Wint, who taught me international business?
So it's not that I doubt that they're good. It's that I just don't know.
Well, I'm telling you, we have a fantastic board. Mm-hmm. You know, Thalia Lynn is on our board as
Well. Yes, and Thalia Lynn, yes. Yeah. Legendary also. Mm-hmm. Yeah. PSOJ Hall of Famer.
So, and actually Mike's son, Adrian, has just joined. One of the things we have been trying to do, and certainly I brought Sanya on board, is to lower the average age of the board.
Yes, because it is.
We're getting up there.
So this is active succession planning at all levels.
Absolutely, active succession planning.
Yeah.
So let's get back to First Angels.
So First Angels, you really seeded the culture of entrepreneurship or responsible entrepreneurship, and in such a way that you can see what you consider established business people paying attention to it and now putting in not just feedback, but also money if the idea is good enough. Yeah. And we've seen the success. You mentioned DRT.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's for me personally, the culmination of all the work I've done all these years, because I've touched hundreds of small business people. But with First Angels, we are able to not just provide them with, you know, access to capital, which is a big problem
for
small business people. Big problem. But so they're not just getting money, but more importantly, they are getting that handholding, that nurturing, that support. I mean, any one of our portfolio companies that needed support from anybody, just think about the 31 people that we have in our members that we have in our network.
Okay, yes.
Are the who is who in business?
Yes, yes.
The people with the highest integrity, the people with loads of capital, right? Not everybody has loads.
You can't drive back, no.
What's it? Too late.
Everybody has some capital.
Some capital and some access. Capital,
and there are some who have loads. But more importantly, there are people who, just yesterday I was talking to a prospect for membership. And he was saying, you know, I don't want to just pay the dues and be a member. I want to be active. I said, that's, you're talking my language now. Because the truth is, we have 31 members, but we probably have 10 or 12 people who are really
hands-on
active, who will volunteer to present a session in the investment readiness program, who will, you know, talk at a meetup or speak at a founder's retreat or sit on a board or coach somebody and just provide guidance. Open up their contact lists.
And put you on to someone else, yes.
You know what a big deal that is?
I do.
Yo, trust me. Oh.
Yeah. First hand, I know what it is.
It's a big deal.
Yeah. Big up Kimala Bennett. I know exactly what that's like. To see what the effect it has on the person where this because of my network I got to her, but not even just Kimala, because Kimala, I'm going to put her in medium.
And by the way, you know, Kimala is a member of our network.
She is, and I saw her presenting on a session of yours recently. Yes, I don't remember the details.
She just did it this past week.
Oh, okay.
She
okay,
did great. A session, and she's going to do another one on the 15th, but she did a session on strategy, growth, and scaling.
Yes, and she
knows a lot about.
She does.
The session, which will be the last session in the series, is on how to become a CEO. Mm-hmm. You know,
and she knows that
right
back to front. Also.
So we have great people in our network who really are all patriotic Jamaicans, if they're not Jamaicans. I mean, Bruce Bowen is in our network. He's in Jamaican.
But he has fallen in love with it.
He has. I mean, he's come back after he's left BNS to start his own company here.
G-Wax, I think, is not. G-Wax isn't Jamaican.
G-Wax
but...
is not Jamaican, but he has a house down the road. Oh, yeah. Mead Malone from the British Virgin Islands, who is a member. Mm-hmm. Again, he comes and he preaches in Runaway Bay every year. Mm-hmm. So we have some great people, Douglas Arane, Stephen Facey, Douglas Hals. I mean, Douglas Hals. Plus, we have great companies. So NCB Cap Markets, JN Bank, First Rock Capital, First Rock, Ryan Reed. We have,
I think, JMB.
PwC. We have JMB. Mm-hmm. We have KPMG. We have Hart Muirhead Fatah. Sanyo represents Hart Muirhead Fatah. We have New Fortress Energy, the DBJ, Cable and Wireless.
That's some major. Who's
lots of people. Stephen Marston, Roderick Gordon, Gregory Peart, Stacey Hines, Jacqueline Leckleff. For me, the right kind of people who not just know business and are successful, but are wanting to help small companies succeed. You know,
I said a major push there.
Definitely.
I am thankful directly and indirectly from seeing a lot of the push that you put there. But I feel like I need to be fair to the listeners and give you a little bit of pushback, because you raised a point, which is a serious point, that small businesses, the funding is still hard. And I'd be bad if I sit here with a board member of my bank, because I own a little piece. So of my bank, and not press on some of those issues.
Which like, bank is it?
NCB, if you've heard of it. Yes, of course.
Bank.
Yes.
Our bank. Well, you know, the thing is that, the truth is that, and I in my training, I look at the financing life cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Banks aren't really meant to fund startups, you know.
That is true. It's a higher risk.
And actually, BOJ regulations really put some brakes on them doing that. So they can, you know, if you have traction and if you are, you know, can show that you're growing, then maybe. But they just won't fund a startup. Right? So, you know, what we are, and I was just talking to Tanya Algrove last week about the need for closer collaboration with the network. Because once you have a small company, it's no longer a startup after we have funded and they're on their way.
Yeah.
But if there is a board in place and there's governance and we are insisting on audited financials and monthly financials and, you know, compliance, tax compliance, which a lot of SMEs aren't.
Yeah, a lot of SMEs run from it.
They run from it, but compliance is a big thing for us. If we have those things, then you're a better candidate for a loan.
A loan, yeah.
Right? And so we are really trying to find a mechanism. And we're working with our banking partners in the network, JMB, JN, you know, DBJ is great because they provide so much support already.
Yes, they do have that voucher program.
Right, I know it's vouchers, grants, all kinds of things. So we are really working with our partners to see how can you make it easier for these companies to get, because they've got some equity, but sometimes they've given up a lot of equity and they don't want to give up anymore. And that's understandable.
True.
We take an average of about, you know, I think for the portfolio we have now is about 28%.
Really?
As an average.
Are you into 40 or so?
No,
28. Okay.
Actually, we don't, we have a deliberate policy that we don't take the majority. We don't want to be majority shareholders.
Because then it's not angel investing. It's a subsidiary. Yeah,
right. So and the other thing is that you want to leave round some room for future rounds.
Yes.
Because most of the companies need more than one round of finance.
I can't say that. But we've seen the effect where you mentioned DRT. We've had on the podcast... Monique's Quick Plate. Yeah, and Monique also is somebody I see who's gone from thinking about the idea, going into the actual idea. I know she's, you can see her getting into like the actual business of it, which is, I don't just have to get my sales, but I have to record my sales, put together, because I have to present it to my board eventually. Mm-hmm. And I mean, well, when we talk to her, people can hear it, you've heard that episode. It is a rough thing, but it's worth it. It's like good work. You know, it's work that you do, you feel good when you do it, and you see the effect of it.
Listen, entrepreneurship is hard. I tell people all the time. Entrepreneurship is hard.
Do them again.
There is no doubt about that. And this is why we are really trying to provide as much support as possible. We are partnering. And we had a great founders retreat in February this year. McKinsey and Company facilitated it and actually came for it. They brought the founders books so that they can read up on stuff. I'm talking now to Google for Startups. And they are going to be working with us on some of the meetups that we are planning.
Oh, that's good.
Bringing some of their specialists.
Some of their talent.
Which
is what we've always needed.
Right.
Indeed.
Yeah. You know, and we're using local talent. And we're really always looking for good deal flow. So this investment readiness program that we are running now, there are 20 people in it. And they're going to be pitching... next week, Tuesday and Wednesday, in front of real live angels. I'm surprised how well the virtual thing has worked. Using Zoom, and it's great. You know, you can still do a lot of interactive things.
Yes, yeah, you can.
And they're really appreciating it.
I can. Are you going to run it again? Because the people hearing this know. Definitely,
we're going to run it again. We've been... partnering with DBJ, we started in 2018. We're working with the DBJ. We used to do it by ourselves prior to that, like a one-day thing. Then it became a two-day. And now it's like 6 days. Because what we are finding is that there's lots of stuff. You know, once you've invested, you expect that founder to be running a business that has millions and millions of dollars of investment.
And that founder now has a responsibility.
Definitely. Exactly. And many of them don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
You know? So it's not just about pitching. It's not just about coming up with an idea. It's not just about coming up with some numbers in a projection. It's not just about that presentation. It's about... can you manage your people?
Yeah.
Can you manage your customers? Can you manage your finances? Can you manage your intellectual property? Do you know how?
Yeah. Do you even know that you're doing a business? That's a thing that...
Well, yes. Yeah. No, they're doing a business, but they don't... I mean, Danielle tells this story all the time, you know, she was saying, I'm having this issue with my staff. Do I sing Kumbaya or do I go the other way?
Yeah, good cup or bad cup? Yeah.
which way, how do I handle it? You know, and I appreciate, that's why I appreciate Danielle. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, she said, meet me for breakfast, let's talk about it. And her chairman is the kumbaya one, and I'm the tough one.
So you're the bad cop.
And we came up with middle. A solution that you know, she could work with.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, we're really interested in getting, because we think that this is the only way the economy is going to grow.
You are 100% right.
You're 100%. It is. It is literally the only way.
Yes.
Yeah. I have a pet theory, I say all the time, about how I can track. I personally think that you can track Jamaica's economic resurgence from Legion taking over NCB and having to find growth. And then 07 happened, and then you definitely have to find growth, and you can't go to Wells Fargo, so you had to find it here. And so what happened was that, as much as I say I was pressing on NCB, NCB has actually been great to small businesses.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Look, they great need to pay me for this ad.
Startups.
Yeah, but exactly. So on that point, however, what happened is that as smaller and smaller companies started getting more and more funding, they started to spread more and they hire more. And so we have something that would start, like, going back to Kimala. Kimala, who liked doing music videos, is a filmmaker, is now actually running a multi-billion-dollar ad agency, because it's really just a person with this idea, given the lines along which to run, doing the work, being disciplined, and getting the funding and doing good with the funding, you find that a lot of entrepreneurs.
No, but people want to. You understand. People think it's just the idea, and then everything, the road is clear after that.
Exactly. And I just get it.
And Dana, to be clear, I love the fact that people are entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, they should. Yes. Yeah, they should
because
be.
Because it's a culture. It's a process.
Yes,
right?
It is. Exactly.
Yeah.
But it's understanding that it doesn't stop there, and not also to be fooled by the glitz.
Oh, God.
Yeah, the glitz grab everybody.
And I want to come back to my friend Kimala, because one of the things about Kimala, and she will tell you this, is that she sought out mentors.
Yes, actively.
So I was one of those people that she sought out. And I'll tell you, one of my daughters, very jealous of the relationship that I have with Kimala. You know, she'd say, but why are you and Kimala hanging out? You realize that she could be your daughter. I said, uh-huh. But we just, she understands me, I understand her. And she is always, Sandy, I mean, she'll call me. Oh, we lean on each other, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
But just if you look at her story, she's always found mentors and utilized their support.
The support, the talent. I tell her that. I think her greatest thing is being able to identify like a specific talent in somebody and the use for it and bringing it out there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I was not as great at business. I understand business. I know to make money, help people with their businesses. But I never call myself a strategist. And she said, no, but you're a strategist. So really, Kimala, tell me more. But she was right. Yeah, she's like that. She in the way she's mentioned,
she empowers.
Yeah, man, she empowers you. And it's not a fake thing. You actually see the active thing. So to see a lot, hearing those stories from people and seeing it linked back to you and hearing how you look at it and where you came from, to me is huge, 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 huge. And I don't know if you get enough praise for it, you know.
Well,
you feel you get enough praise for it?
I do get a lot of great feedback. I mean, I don't do it for the likes. I do it for the love, right? And you know, that's fine for me. I'm blessed beyond measure in the opportunities that I have
gotten from
all the work that I have done over many, many years.
And still doing,
and hope to do. My husband is going to retire in December. I said, only you.
You're still working.
I am not good. Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, because I still have a lot of energy and passion. I'm down here at 4 o'clock in the morning sometimes.
Wow.
Just because if I have stuff to do, I have stuff to do. I have to get it done, right?
Yeah. No.
So I still have a lot of energy and passion about the things that I do. And, you know, I sit on 10 boards.
And it's 10 serious boards.
And yeah, well, you know, some of them are not startup boards. But yeah. I take those as seriously as I do my other board. I must get my board papers. I read them. I'm going to, the other day, a colleague, we were looking at an audit, audited financial statements, and he said, Sandro, you pick up all of those, you know, because I read every word, and that, that has come through some of my training being on the audit committee at NCB, you know.
That's that a corporate again.
You can't send out a financial statement with grammatical or accounting or arithmetic or any other errors.
Yes.
So you have to read every single word.
Correct.
And you have to, it has to make sense.
Correct.
Right? So it's no different for a big company than for a small company.
Exactly.
Excellence is my mantra.
Yeah, I like that. Oh, well, we might need you. Have you considered being on the board of the stock exchange?
Why would I be on the board of the stock exchange? No, I haven't. And to tell you the truth, Ryan Reed is on my mind. No, the thing is, I'm actually looking to see how I can cut back on some of my boards because
it takes energy. It
takes a lot of energy, and the way I do it, I'm on 3 pension fund boards. I'm on two of our startup boards. I'm on the Student Loan Bureau board. I'm on NCB and NCBFG.
Yeah.
I'm chairman of Crime Stop.
Wow, that's where. Plus your own company.
Plus my own company.
Yeah, wow.
I'm on the board of Multicare Youth Foundation.
Oh. You are not resting. I thought you really, yeah, really only.
So
who's retired?
No, I'm not.
You're definitely not retiring.
Am I old enough to retire?
I don't think so, right. Actually. Well, you told me the years. I'm thinking, this don't make sense. It's the same person, I know.
But I mean, I can
look, and I'm only looking 20 odd years. I'm 33 and I'm looking back 20 odd years at most. And I'm seeing huge changes. But you obviously have a much bigger purview. So if you could change, like, what would you want to see going forward for the space in Jamaica?
Yeah, I think that there isn't enough recognition and incentives for growth-oriented startup and early-stage companies. The tax burden on these companies is
too heavy.
It's too heavy.
Yeah.
I do understand the abuse that the systems in former years, the waivers and, you know, tax holidays and those things brought about. But I mean, DBJ is doing a fantastic job, but they are not touching
the ground.
They're not touching the majority of small businesses that need support.
Agreed.
I'm very, I'm really feel that there isn't enough educational support for people who want to start businesses. When I went to CAST in 1987, and I think we started that course in 1988, every single student in every single department was required to do a 36-hour course in how to start a small business and succeed.
Wow.
Every student.
Wow. No entrepreneurship.
You can't miss it at all. You have to get that
early. Elective. Yeah. And you don't have to do.
You don't have to do.
Yeah.
Right?
Wow.
But, you know, I have to give Dr. Sanks a lot of credit for his vision, because his vision was that every student leaving the institution should be equipped to start their own business. Every student. And I mean, whether you're an engineer or a marketer or a land surveyor or a somebody in the health services or mm-hmm. in any of the disciplines that you
IT,
can get.
If you program, yeah.
IT, all mm-hmm. of these, right? Mm-hmm. And the same thing at UWA, elective courses that you don't have to do and that aren't really touching enough people. So we have a lot of people who are trying to do a thing.
Yes. Hustle.
Mm-hmm.
Trying. And I mean, they have good intentions. Mm-hmm. They want, they've seen something online.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening in another market. They mm-hmm. want you to want try it here. There,
yeah.
But they don't know how.
Yeah.
They mm-hmm. don't know how to come back to. They don't know how to manage finances. They don't know how to manage people. They don't mm-hmm. know how to manage customers. So there's a lot of
financial illiteracy.
Yes.
Illiteracy. Yeah. It's not just financial. It's business.
Business. Yeah. Yep. When I find something business.
It's business,
business yeah.
illiteracy
mm-hmm.
that takes a long time for you to catch up and learn. And it's probably going to be too late.
Yeah. A lot of
once
people,
you learn it.
A lot of people don't know that. I mean, I've tried and I still do try to invest with smaller businesses. Mm-hmm. If you know, if somebody has a shop and they do, if somebody have a farm, I try. I'm not just to help out. I don't seem like it's charity because if I'm putting my money there, I care right. about it. So I want to grow. But I realize oftentimes we thought those people did.
They don't want to grow.
And a lot of them don't understand the concept of a business. Like,
yeah.
I'm not giving you $1 million.
Yes.
I'm putting $1 million in the business.
Yeah.
You still have to work. You're going to have mm-hmm. to work hard. And I can only help you to the tune of $1 million. And I don't want it to... I make it very clear that I'm helping you. And I'm trying. I want you to do the best. And you can be sure that I want to do the best because my money is in there. But I find that a lot of people honestly think that I can have a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And Leeching going to come in with a helicopter. And I'm going to land. And I'm going to say, it's a great idea. You should take $2 billion for it. And he'll give you the $2 billion and then... It done. It has not worked. Yeah, and he didn't pay you. Even just a concept of explaining that this is the investment,
mm-hmm.
but it's not your money. It's a company's money. So how much are you going to pay yourself? And you see, they realize that, wait, no, but this is money for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's a company now. So the company has a capital, a base of $1 million. What are you putting in?
And a lot of people forget that. But I don't think they don't realize that there are other owners. So when I invest in your business, I own it too.
Yes. So you can't tell me around the corner and say, oh, no, I'm going to get a little thing for the... What?
Yeah.
No, the company got that? No, I just do... No.
Or wait, you hear that they paid a dividend, in essence, but you never know about that dividend.
Yeah, they never paid a dividend, but they need that money.
We didn't need that money. So you take the money out of the company, you never hear about it.
Yeah.
You look like you're tired and you've heard it a lot.
Let me tell you, it's a struggle. It really is. And so... You know, I say all the time when people ask me, I say, what I would do is make sure that... So I don't know if you have ever met Alfie Mullings-Aiken.
What does she do?
She runs Junior Achievement Jamaica. Mm-hmm. I used to sit on that board when I was at the PSOJ. Doing fantastic work, doing extracurricular activities in several schools.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, plenty schools in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an extracurricular activity. I want to see the day when entrepreneurship becomes a subject
mm-hmm.
at primary school,
mm-hmm.
high school, and at university, you have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right? Because the business illiteracy is a big
It's huge. Mm-hmm. It's huge.
It's huge.
It's huge. It's people, huge. We have a get a job culture. Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. You need workers. you can't grow on it.
But I think people need to understand the value of what they can bring. And I realize they don't. I have a little brother who's the same. He's just now realizing that, wait, he likes vehicles. We've hated it for years. I'm like, you can't be a mango tree mechanic. I used to tease him with the same thing, but he truly loved it, stuck with it. I mean, overseas, to learn, train, and work at these good garages. And now he's just coming, he's like, wait. He's working for a guy, and he told me that the bar in boss said to him, say, do you want to work or you want to live? I look at him and say, wait, why do I have to choose? And it's him starting to learn and click that. No, if you have a true skill and you have a true, if you're bringing value in a specific area to the point where someone is willing to give you money for that value, that's a business, but formalize it and it works best for you. It literally works better for you.
But it's a skill also to grow a business. So
yes.
This is why a lot of people don't want the business to really grow because they don't have the skill to take it to that level. It gets scary because you lose control of it.
Yep.
You know? And a lot of them want to be able to make every decision and do every aspect of the world.
Yeah, letting go is hard. Letting go is hard.
And finding the talent to trust. Help you that you can trust to take it to that level. That's another thing.
Other people, so they start the business and they do this part, this part, and then they find it taking somewhere. The person more skilled at that one thing than them, but they just
won't let them.
Or they won't even acknowledge that the person is the better person to do it.
Absolutely.
It's a fear because I know it's hard for me to do it, but I know I can do it, and I know when I do it, it's done. It's harder for me to let it go and trust that you'll do it, because if you get it wrong, and you might get it wrong too, if you get it wrong, it's still me and I'm feeling. But I think people need to understand that is part of business.
It's a conversation I have in our investment readiness program. I said, listen, what would you say or do if your investors say you could not be CEO? Right, because everybody has a dream of being
top CEO,
founder CEO, president and CEO. You know,
president, founder, CEO, and MD.
Right? But you may not actually be the best person to be the CEO.
That is a business.
So understanding the difference between being a shareholder, an owner of the company, and being a CEO who runs and maximizes the potential of the company. That's a big problem too. Right? And it's a conversation. So, I mean, you know, back a few years ago, one of the reasons a lot of small business people didn't want investors to come into their business is because of this fear that they would come and take over
my business.
Still is there.
Take away the business. But, I mean, you can't take away the business if you own the share.
But then my family as CEO.
Yeah.
I said, if the board thinks that you are such a bad CEO that you should go, and they find somebody better than you, and that person runs the company, you're no home making money. And I bring them back to the Apple example all the time. I said, when Steve Jobs left that company, they were barely scratching in the billions. When he came back, it was a multinational, multi-billion dollar company that he took back over. And he had to leave to learn to do it somewhere else. It's the difference between seeing the glitz of the story and the reality of the story.
Coming back to the business literacy.
Literally that. And to bring it to the listeners, one, I want to mention about stocks. It's the same thing in stocks. And I say it all the time. It's great to be hear us talking about, oh, we saw Cygnus there and we bought it at $10 and it's at $20 now. But you don't get the $20 praise without getting the $10 fear. We had to see the $20 in our mind and click buy at $10 and trust that what we're seeing is there and pay attention and up 3 o'clock in the morning recalculating, blah blah blah. And you see the $20 and it look good and you're like, boy, I want to do it like you. You can, as I tell people all the time, you can, but it's not as nice as you look. You don't get to be bolt at the finish line without being bolt in the gym. Nobody that part is not as glamorous.
That's not as glamorous.
Leeching on the helicopter is not. People are like, oh, I want to be on the private jet. Let me tell you something. The first thing I learned the second I started getting money is that the reason rich people have luxury is because they're always working. And so I need to be able to rest nicely while working. He doesn't have the private jet because it's nice to have a private jet. Although I'm sure it's nice. I'd like to find out.
Private jet and the two helicopters.
Tell us. Because I sleep better here on the yacht. But I also have a 7 a.m. meeting at the headquarters, and the best way to get there is on the helicopter. And all of a sudden you no longer notice the trappings. It's just, I need to get there.
Or as Michael would tell you, those days that he would walk from door to door in Canada
trying to sell insurance and invest. That is
unit
a hard job, you know.
And being rejected
again and again.
You know, I mean, think about that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
In a country that's not yours, though, as a Jamaican.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Precisely.
Yeah,
precisely.
That is hard. So I can tell you that.
He's deserving of every single mm-hmm. set that he has made.
Yeah, he didn't get it by chance.
And one of the things I always say to people, too, you know, with Michael, you know, the notion that you build a business and that you are going to have that business forever.
Mm. No. I build something that's... If I build it right, it's going harvest. To become bigger than me. Yeah.
And you can.
And I should.
And you should sell it.
You
and
should.
When to sell it.
You should, exactly.
So Daniel will tell you this story because I remember when I was coaching her to pitch and I said to her, well, what's the exit strategy for this business?
Yeah.
And she said, exit strategy, what's that? I said, well, when you sell the business so that the angels can get their
return.
And
yeah.
It's like bawling. He's like, no, I don't want to sell the business. No, I'm not going to sell my business. Ask Danny today.
Don't she understand?
Ready to sell.
Yeah.
Because we're pursuing the exit strategy. Mm-hmm. And she's ready to sell DRT. Anybody wants to buy?
No.
DRT. right? Because she's going to do something else. Which is what entrepreneurs do.
Yes, yes.
That's what real entrepreneurs do. They create something new.
And then they go on to something else.
And they just think about all the businesses Mike has had that he no longer owns.
Exactly.
But he's harvested to buy another business.
Yeah. Right? And you do it right, you still have a little piece left in there.
Of course.
Yeah, but it is the way forward and people need to get that. If Daniel is looking for someone to buy her business, I mean, I know people who buy businesses.
Yes.
Yeah, I also know the...
Give her a call.
I will try. Well, I think...
She'll tell you.
I'll tell you. But if it's a serious thing, it is a good thing. But for the people listening also, the consideration all the time in business of what you need to do, not just now, but tomorrow. And you shouldn't think of a business. It's the same job idea. No. Don't think of your business as your job. So you're thinking, a lot of times, I don't want to sell. Because it's like, in my mind, it's the same as getting fired.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're in a business in such a way that I shouldn't have to be there every day. And if I'm not there every day, what now am I caring about? And whatever that thing that's caring about is taking your time is going to eventually become your passion. So you should be able to let this thing go.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, when we engage with our portfolio companies, when we invest in them, we say, well, the job one for your board is to start thinking about your exit strategy. And start looking at where must I be, because you pitched it.
Yes.
You said in 2024 you're going to be here. How are you actually going to get there?
Yeah, this is exactly right? Like investing.
Yes.
But you see,
it is investing.
The idea of the pitch, and you can go up there and tell them any foolishness. The pitching is, I'm going to be, this is where I'll be in 2024. And this is how much investors will get, how they'll get a return on their investment. You have to start working, putting in the right strategies to actually get there.
Yep.
So that you can sell those shares, sell a part of the business, sell the shares, whatever. So that the angels can get their return.
Correct, yeah.
But you will get a return too, and you can retain some shares. Whoever buys it, if they don't want to buy the whole thing, you can retain some shares. You can go buy your yacht and sail or whatever you want to do. Or you can start a new business, because that's what entrepreneurs, real entrepreneurs do.
Yeah, again and again, you can't stop it. You're
right. You can't stop it. If you're itchy, you cannot stop.
We were joking after a couple of episodes ago about, we always talk about leeching on the program. When you think about it, the man is a huge coffee farmer now. He's coffee, not so well,
but he has this big farm now at Innswood.
That's the second thing I was going to touch. I don't know if coffee not doing so well, because
the pricing had gone down.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he still has the coffee.
But he's early in it, because he has now consolidated a huge part. I really need to talk to him. You know? He has now changed the face of the industry.
Yeah. Let me see.
No,
just
you call
him.
You tell him right now that I said. but it really is a different sort of thinking. Once you change your approach to it, and to see that sort of change now happening in the space, and knowing that we still have the people around who started it, because mm-hmm. back in the day it was I just trying to hustle. Yeah. And we have a lot of companies still mm-hmm. now that are literally just that is hustle. And I come inherit yep. it as my hustle. And I teach you're a hustle. Now we have to step away from it. So I like that you do Angel. And I should then ask, because you mentioned the art, you mentioned selling. When are we going to see the Angel Network put something onto the exchange?
Well, the companies, so DRT may well, we're exploring options now. Mm-hmm. They might IPO, so we have options. We're looking at
different things. Here's hoping.
Yeah. But, as I said at the start, I think any company that is seeking to list on the stock exchange must understand that they have to have shareholders are going to expect growth yep. in mm-hmm. the business. Mm-hmm. They're going to expect dividends. So mm-hmm. you must be generating enough cash mm-hmm. to be able to pay those dividends and profits. Mm-hmm. So it's not, no losing. No
walk in the park.
No net losses yeah. are allowed.
Yeah. If they're allowed to cut you just on that, but if they are allowed, it is that what you think of it like the pitch. You sell a story to those investors, but then you have to deliver yep. on the story.
So whatever it is you in that prospectus, people will be looking back mm-hmm. at it to say what did they say they were going to do?
Predictions.
And if you don't, you get punished.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And the punishment can be harsh, as it should be.
And the punishment. But you are also punishing the people who put their money
into it. Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Into it.
Yeah.
So it's mm-hmm. a big responsibility. So mm-hmm. we wouldn't, our companies would need to really demonstrate that they're on a growth path, mm-hmm. they're profitable, and they can fulfill shareholders' expectations.
She's right.
I like that. All right, I won't keep you much longer. Yeah, thank you so much, Sandra, for this. Do we have a run the gauntlet?
We have our
thing that we do. Uh-huh. For each of our guests, we ask them about the market, because we still do care about the stock market. Yes. And we ask them to tell, I won't press you now since it's corona times, I'll give you...
Say,
what kind of investor are you? Near term, long term?
Long term.
Long term all the way. Buy, hold, prosper. All right. I know that's also the leeching method.
I'm not a speculator.
Excellent. All right. So I'll ask you to tell me three mm-hmm. companies that you would buy now.
Mm-hmm. That I would buy now.
Right now. to hold for, let's say, next 10?
Yeah.
Next 10 years.
Next 10 years.
To tell the truth, I'm not sure. I am watching the market. I haven't bought any stocks.
Since March, the first week of March. A lot of people have been out, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but it's a good time to buy.
Yeah. I mean, there are some that I Seprod.
Can't go wrong.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Of course, NCBFG. I'm
biased
to increase my shareholdings there. To tell you the truth, Randy, I haven't looked at the stock prices in a while. The stocks that I have in my portfolio that mm-hmm. I like,
mm-hmm.
I have Trans Jamaica.
Mm-hmm. That's not going anywhere anytime soon. Right. You're good with that, yeah.
I have GMMB.
Also not going anywhere anytime soon. Very good with that.
Carreras is one of my favorite stocks.
Also not going anywhere.
It's a good pick.
Yeah, strong, solid, long pick.
So after about 3 years.
Jamaica Producers, mm-hmm. Jamaica Broilers. My blue chips are... To tell the honest truth, I have not really... dabbled in the junior market much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think just because of my age, mm-hmm. I've sort of have that solid
base
mm-hmm. of blue chips that
and that's
that are dividend paying, mm-hmm. which is what I like.
Mm-hmm.
And I think investors, you guys can do your speculation. You're 33.
Yeah.
How old are you, Dana?
27.
Okay, even younger. Right? So you can do that. And I mean, I would encourage every young person to start with anything.
Yes.
Okay. Start buying stocks. Just buy. I mean, I can... If when I look back in my files at what I bought these stocks for, you know, two decades ago, or whenever it was I bought them, you know, you really just need to start. I'm big on saving. I've always been a saver. No, I'll spend, but I
you also save
as
well. Yeah, you know? But your picks are great.
Great, actually.
Yeah.
And we asked what three and gave us.
Yeah, much more.
Give
the people the gems. So your Holy Ghost, it's just that those are so good because those are the companies that, I, like, especially now in COVID times, they're...
And they're still resilient.
Yeah.
And I have Apple.
Oh, you're definitely winning then.
Yeah.
You should go and check that right now to see, because you're up a lot.
I mean,
a lot
of money. With like two
Apple shares are worth a lot right now. And they're about to split into so you're getting a good run out of that.
Yeah.
And
I should do more overseas stocks. I really
should. No, you should actually do more local stocks.
I should do more local stocks.
Yeah, man. Local is...
I'm big in the stock market.
Yeah. A lot. We see your names on a lot of lists. I like that. So we hear yourself. So you're about entrepreneurship. You're about actually people being empowered and learning. Well, not just do it, but also learning while they do it. But you also invest. Yeah, perfect. Thank you so much.
Sandra. This was great.
It was. Yeah. I told you it was.
Imagine how we feel.
I loved it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I hope to have you back again. Definitely. I hope actually to have Miss Terry Long from DRT here soon. Hopefully.
She'll be a great guest.
I think so. I hope so. And let me just say thank you. Thank you to the listener. Thank you, Danai. Of course, this has been Earnings Season. Again, I'm Randy at RT on Twitter.
And I'm Danai at HDanai on Twitter.
And this has been Sandra. You want to tell me at? You want them to follow you on Twitter?
At Glasgow Sandra. Glasgow_Sandra.
The one and only. Also on Twitter. So she's not...
I'm a Twitter... What is...
I don't
Twitter.
Know what we call ourselves. You're an influencer.
I'm not an influencer, but I love Twitter.
Yeah, there is nothing quite like it in terms of keeping pace. Again, you're on
that's
the cutting edge.
That's where I get
edge.
My news.
Yes. Yeah, that's where everybody gets their news. No, wow. Well, thank you so much for being here, right? And we will hopefully do this again very, very soon.
Thanks. Indeed.
No problem. Thanks.
The whole heap of money Ralph just saved. We got $2,000 out of it.
You chase side before you say $250.